good. Okay. Well, I think we have to attend to the question, what is a definition, before we can say what a definition of interest is. And I have three sources that I wanted to share with you. The one we always start with, Webster's Third International Dictionary. And there's several different definitions of a definition given in it. I took the second one. To quote it, it says, a word or phrase expressing the essential nature of a person or thing or class of persons or of things, an answer to the question, what is X or what is an X? That's end quote. So that's a very broad, general definition of what we mean by definition. So I'd like to add in another source to clarify our understanding of what a definition is. And this comes from the philosophy of science, based primarily on a book, Introduction to Logic and Scientific Method, by Cohen and Nagel, appeared in 1934. But I think that the logical definition they give is one that is still applicable today. They say, a phenomenon or variable is defined by specifying what it is and what it is not. And you think of the little meaning of definition, it means to define. So it includes excluding other variables and including those of interest to the scholar. I think one way of conceptualizing that, how many of you are familiar with Venn diagrams? Circles? Okay. All A's are B's, but not all B's are A's, that kind of thing. In 1969, I had occasion to write a review for the Educational Research Encyclopedia. And in that, I wrote, interests have been distinguished from some variables, but not others. Their definitions have been more operational than conceptual, with only vaguely formulated relationships between the two. And I think that can be related to Venn diagrams as far as what the definition of a definition is. Because we have other variables in vocational psychology which we need to distinguish interests from if we're going to provide a definition, a clear-cut definition of interest. And the way I see it as being defined more fully is through the distinction between interests and other variables we measure, like aptitudes. Now, traditionally, the correlational data on the relationship of interest to aptitudes has shown that there's very low relationships, although sometimes significant, like 0.25 to 0.30. So there's not much relationship between interests and aptitudes. Now you can do this in very varied and sundry ways. You can take people with high aptitude and low aptitude and compare them on interest inventories, and sometimes you can come up with some pretty clear distinctions. But I think on the whole, the relationship between interests and aptitudes is not very high. Now I know I'll get in trouble, my esteemed colleague John Holland, on this one, but I don't think there's much relationship between interest and personality. Dating back to a study that came out in Psychometrica by Cottle in 1950, I think correlations on a group of 400 Veterans Administration hospitals and centers, the correlations were sometimes significant, according to Darling Hagenau, because if you take the O1 level, correlation 0.13 is significant. If you take the O5 level, correlation 0.10 is significant. So some of the correlation coefficients in Cottle's correlational matrix were significant, but the overlap, the percent of variance accounted for, was very low. And that plus subsequent studies, I think, tend to indicate that the relationship between personality variables and interest variables is not very high. So now, in those last two statements, defined interest to a certain extent from personality variables and also from aptitudes. And so I think in terms of trying to focus in on a definition of interest, why that's helpful. I think we have the empirical data, although it can be questioned, and I know it will be questioned afterwards about personality and interest, but okay. There's another way of defining interest, I think, and that's in terms of test methodology. I think the clearest distinction is between tests, which usually have right and wrong answers, and which we use for achievement testing, aptitude testing, and the assessment of proficiency variables or skills. And there always are right and wrong answers to those tests. In fact, we usually use the term test to refer to the measurement of those cognitive variables. Inventories, on the other hand, typically do not have right and wrong answers. Now, there's one exception, the field of interest measurement, I'll bring up in a few minutes. And so we have interests, personality variables, attitudes, self-described behaviors, and these kinds of variables, which are usually inventoried rather than tested. So there's a second way of defining interests through the test methodology. And then in relatively recent past, I tried to make the distinction between career choice process and career choice content. Career choice process is essentially contentless, like an career maturity inventory. Occasionally, names of occupations are used, but only within the context of eliciting attitudes toward the choice process and the kinds of variables that play a part in career decision making. Career choice content is more like interest inventories, where you ask an individual to express preferences or agreement, disagreement, or rating scale of different activities, both avocational and vocational, occupational titles, and so forth. We're all familiar, of course, with interest inventories. But I think this is worthwhile to make the distinction between career choice process, which is essentially contentless, and career choice content, which bears a much closer resemblance to interest inventories, because there is content in there. So just to summarize what I've said thus far, in terms of what is a definition, it's excluding other properties or characteristics of variables from interest and including those which bear upon the measurement of interest. And there, why we're talking about inventories, which have no right or wrong answers usually. And we're also talking about the distinction between career choice process and career choice content. So what we're looking for then in the definition of interest is some way of encapsulizing the variables that we're measuring with our inventories and what the relationship of those variables is to other variables. When give a more general definition of interest, quote from Strong's 1955 book, where he drew the analogy between interest and what he called tropisms. It's a biological term of microorganisms being drawn to a light source. And so this he clarified by writing as follows in this quotation. He defined interest as, quote, activities for which we have liking or disliking, in which we go forwards or away from, that's the tropism, or concerning which we at least continue or discontinue the status quo. Furthermore, they may or may not be preferred to other interests, and they may continue over varying intervals of time. So essentially, we are attracted to some stimulus in the environment, which gives us a feeling of liking, and we're repelled from that particular stimulus or other stimuli by some aversive nature characteristics of that stimulus. Well, that's pretty abstract. So I think to make it further specified as far as our measurement is concerned, I'll turn to Appraising Vocational Fitness, which Don Super and I co-authored in 1962. And there we explicated four different definitions of interest. And in a few moments, I'm going to add a fifth, which may or may not be familiar to you. Expressed interest we define as the verbal profession of interest in an object, activity, task, or occupation. So if you ask someone, which occupation do you intend to enter? And they give you a response to that. That would define expressed interest. Well, I'm interested in going into psychology or career counseling or something like that. So it's the self-report, the verbal report of the individual in response to the question, which occupation do you tend to enter? That's expressed interest. Now we have manifest interest, defined as synonymous with participation in an activity or occupation, end quote. We presume that if a person is engaged in an activity or is performing certain tasks, that that's a manifestation of their interest in that particular activity or occupation, whatever it happens to be. So that's manifest interest. Tested interest. Do you know of any interest tests? Here are the Michigan Vocabulary Profile test. I knew Don would, yeah. But it is defined as follows, and this is again from the Appraising Vocational Fitness. Tested interest, quote, is here used to refer to interest as measured by objective tests, as differentiated from inventories, which are based on subjective self-estimates, end quote. And this is E.B. Green's Michigan Vocabulary Profile Test. The assumption is that the more you know about a particular activity or occupation, it's assumed that you have interest in that activity or occupation. So that if you score high on a particular scale of activity or task or occupation, well, then presumably you know something about those activities, tasks, and occupations. And that means you're interested in them. Kind of an interesting idea, but very little validity evidence on the Michigan Vocabulary Profile Test. So I include that just to for completeness' sake. And of course, the definition that we're most familiar with is inventory interest. We wrote, assessed by means of lists of activities and occupations which bear a superficial resemblance to some questionnaires for the study of expressed interest. For each item in the list is responded to with an expression of preference. So the commonality there is expression. And these are the ones, the interest inventories are the ones that have lasted over all these years. since Strong first developed his interest blank in 1927, going through the various revisions up to the present time. So you don't hear much about tested interests or manifest interests anymore. Express interests still used to a certain extent. In fact, in career counseling, if we ask someone, well, which occupation do you intend to enter? Well, they'll give us an expression of their interest. So I think in just our everyday activities in a counseling situation, while we elicit expressed interest. But if we want a more sophisticated appraisal or assessment of interest, then we go to interest inventories, four of which we've taken for this conference. Now, I said before that I wanted to add a fifth definition of interest. And this is what I call machine interest. It's defined as a model or an experimental setup to elicit expressions, preferences of interest. I first came across this when I was a graduate student at Columbia with Don Super. And I was in his office one day and I noticed he had a model of, it's kind of like a machine. And I couldn't get a picture of it. Mark and I tried to find a picture of this machine measure of interest. And I asked Don, what is that? Where did that come from? Well, his mentor was Harry Dexter Kitson. And Kitson had invented this model. It stood about so high, about this way. And the person would sit in front of it and following the directions, presumably would make responses which indicated their interest. And so this is what I mean by machine interest. For lack of a better term, if you can come up with one, I'd be happy to hear it. But this is Harry Dexter Kitson's interest machine. When I was at the University of Iowa, which is a pretty experimentally oriented department, you won't believe this, but they made me chair of the shop committee. Well, I don't know which end of a hammer to use, but just to keep things under control, like that was my role. So I made a setup, an experimental setup, which had a backing board about 3 feet by 5 feet, and then a shutter window where we could present different possible preferences of people. And we had it hooked up to a timer so that when the shuttle opened, there'd be the card there, and we had a button on the tabletop, and the subject would push the button as soon as they were able to make a state of preference, or to say, yes, I like that, no, I dislike it, this kind of thing. Well, I had to leave, I think fortunately, before I went to the University of Maryland from Iowa, before I collected many data on this machine, an experimental setup. But my hunch in looking back is that measuring interest with microseconds and seconds is not powerful enough variable to really hold up under the scrutiny of our psychometric methods. But that gives us a fifth definition of interest. We have expressed interest, manifest interest, tested interest, inventory interest, and for lack of a better term, machine or experimental interest measurement. So I think this pretty much gives us a feel, doesn't it, of what we mean by the definition of interest. We can distinguish interests from other variables, principally aptitudes, but also possibly personality variables. And certainly we can distinguish interest from among the different kinds of modes of measurement we have. And we use inventories instead of tests to define interest. There's a distinction also made just earlier between career choice process and career choice content. Okay. Now I'd like to close with some thoughts on where the future of interest management may lie. Because I think there are some lacunae in what we've done in the past. One of it is, I was talking with John Holland earlier about not being able to find professional athlete in the SDS. And he says it's there, and as I remember, it was a coach or a trainer, something like that. Well, when I got out of high school, I wanted to be a professional athlete. I wanted to play Major League Baseball. I was spared that pain, fortunately, by my mother, who said, you go to college. So I ended up there. Did play baseball and football, but there may be some areas of interest management which are left out of the inventories. And I had a hard time finding, again, the SDS, and I'm not picking on the SDS, John, but it's true of the other inventories, too. But philosopher, for example, historian, areas which I've had a long-standing interest. But I think we might scrutinize the interest inventories for any gaps that we might find there as far as the content of the inventories, the items in the inventories. I wonder if with the data that were generated for this conference, we might fill in a gap since the Cottle study, and there have been other studies of the relationship of interest to other variables. How about the relationship of interest to interests? I think with certain qualifications for forced choice formats and so forth, why it might be possible to take these data, which are collected for the conference, and do a multi-trait, multi-method analysis, set it up in that kind of matrix. And I haven't seen it, I've not thought it clear through, but those of you, Hardy and Mark, who are going to analyze the data, that might be one way to see what the relationship among the different inventories is. Then, last comment, I was talking with John Holland some time ago, and in fact he reiterated the concept before the meeting of the flat profile. Let's take the SDS. You have a flat profile at the upper ranges of the RIASEC system. And the thought I had, I broached with John, was would this define what in common parlance we usually refer to as the Renaissance person? The Renaissance person. This is someone who has multi-potentiality of interests, multiple interests across the board, all of which are slightly above average. It's not like having a very clearly defined score in a particular area, but this is across the board. And John was saying this morning that he has a flat profile. That's not a pejorative term. Stick with me now. I'm almost through, all right? But I think it would be fun to see whether there were some flat profiles, and that's the elevation dimension of a profile, the height of the scores, the magnitude of the scores, and how close the scores are to each other. And that, along with relationships to other variables, might define what we usually refer to as the Renaissance person. And I think the data are there from the interest inventories that this group has taken. Well, my time's almost up, so I'll close with a quotation from Darlene Hagenaugh's 1955 book on vocational interest measurement. And it relates this notion of multiple interests and the Renaissance person. They write, quote, multiple primary interest patterns are frequently found. This we interpret to mean that individuals show a greater multi-potentiality of interest on the revised blank, that's the 1938 edition. An individual may find satisfaction in wider range of occupational tasks or in more than one family of occupations. So I think that's very thought-provoking. We haven't taken a close enough look, I don't think, at the multi-potentiality of interest. But in a group of Renaissance people like you, maybe we can find that multi-potentiality of interest.